session number 17675, Sergeant Fred White, Reel 13.
Sergeant White, Reel 13. You're going to tell me how many rifles there were in the DCRE.
It's about 12 rifles and two or three revolvers belonging to the officers. But they were dirty, and I had a talk with this WO1, and I told him I was an experienced infantryman and I know what was wanted. And I assured him that they would be put in order that day. Well, he took my word for it, and he didn't put in an adverse report, which when I reported back to the admin officer, he had a fit that the orders hadn't been passed on.
Right.
He was at fault, really. Make sure that the job had been carried out. Because this other sergeant had been posted, there'd been a lapse of time where they didn't have a QE sergeant, so nothing got done on that side.
Because there was nobody in charge.
Well, that's what it meant to be. But, I mean, as the admin officer, you should have made some effort to get it done. That's what I thought. Anyway, we got away with it. Well, that was the job there, and I got on very well with the DCRE, in actual fact. Later on, the 401 DCRE closed down, and it looked as if I were going to be out of a job again. And it was then formed into a garrison engineer.
Right.
With only one officer in charge. And we came under then 410 DCRE, we were in Munster Lager. That was the headquarters of it. Well, they realised there's still the same number of civilians employed. Somebody had to do a bit of queue work up there. So they decided to let me stay. So the transport thing ended. I didn't have to do that. So my job really was quite easy.
Sounds like your job was mainly administering the civilian employees.
Yes. Now, there was a time when this officer, unfortunately, he was an alcoholic.
The administrative officer?
No, this is the garrison engineer.
Oh, the garrison engineer.
We had no ministry officer anymore, right. Just the garrison engineer. And he was a very nice man, but he had to go in the hospital sometimes there, and there was nobody else left in charge. Although they had some well up-to-date German employees who knew the job backwards what was to be done, but they wasn't allowed to sign anything as far as finance was concerned. So up to a certain amount, I think up to 1,000 marks or something, I was allowed to do it. Anything else, then I had to go back to Munster Lager, to the headquarters.
Now this sounds like your job is becoming rather like a business manager's job.
Yes, in a way.
How did you organise things with the civilian employees? Did they have foremen and managers amongst them? Or did you have to give them detailed orders?
No, they had their own different sections, of which we say a foreman or supervisor would be in charge of that section. But if they wanted a job done that meant spending money, they had to if the officer wasn't there, they had to come to me and explain what it was. And then I would sign it. If the amount was too large, then I'd have to pass it on to Munster Lager.
So this was basically barrack maintenance and repairs.
Barrack maintenance, yes. Then out of the blue, I got a posting. Go back to DCLI.
Do you know how that had happened?
I don't know. Somebody must have got records. Must have got hold of my name somehow or the other, and to be posted back, and I objected against it on these grounds. that when I was in the DCLI, I was a band sergeant, and soon after I left, they brought out time promotion. And I'd already been 7 years as a band sergeant, and I would have only had one more year to go to qualify for Warrant Officer Class 2. So I said, if I'm to be posted back, I want to be posted back into the rank what I'm supposed to be in. And I knew I wasn't going to stay in this job. I said, just prior to that, barrack services started up because they're going to open up Murray Quarters, and they was taking people with any queue work experience, no matter who they belong to come into the RASC, as it was, to set up the accounting for all the accommodation stores in the army. So this looked like a long-term business in Lunenburg, so I was interested in this and immediately put in an application for it.
How did barrack services differ from the previous arrangement with a garrison engineer or a DCRE?
Well, the barrack services was purely for the accounting and supply.
Yes.
Of all furnishings in a barracks, officers and sergeants messes, Murray Quarters.
Wasn't responsible for the fabric of the buildings then?
Mm?
Was it responsible for the fabric of the buildings?
No, at that time, no, not in the fabric. That still came under the engineers.
So it was the internal?
Yes, the internal, yes.
Yes, right.
There's a scale laid down for every room, type of room there is in the army, what it can be furnished. And it was our responsibility to see that it was done. Anyway, in my objection about being posted back to England, they accepted this then. And they said I could be transferred to the new job. The Boschman. I was still DCLI, by the way. Then I joined a group of NCOs. There must have been about five of us, I think, and we had to open up accounting books for each regiment or Murray Quarter. Now, a lot of these places, especially in the barracks there, were still German items in situ, which had to be bought on charge. We had to describe the item and bring it on charge and all that type of thing for the unit.
So you're making inventories of the contents
of barracks. Make an inventory of every barracks, all the rooms and that type of thing. And also, this all had to be signed up, handed over to the unit concerned. We then also had to do periodical inspections with the unit. Of what is wanted, items damaged to be exchanged, because we opened up then a barrack store which held all these items.
Where did you get new ones? Was it by local purchase or was it centrally
no,
supplied?
In Bielefeld they opened a tremendous big, what was it? It was then a lager they had in Germany there, where they made the contracts with German firms to make the furniture, and then big bulk stores were kept in Bielefeld. And then each military town, like Lunenburg, we would then demand on them for stores, which were then usually sent by rail to us. This went on some time as well. We had to start equipping Murray Quarters. The families from England started moving out. It was a bit sparse to go or start off with. There was no carpets available, but as time goes on, so it improved. I got very interested in this job, matter of fact, and they called themselves barrack inventory accountant or a barrack stores accountant. So the stores accountant, had the, he held the bulk stores, and the one with the inventory accounts, he did the inventories for the units or Murray Quarters. I was on the barrack inventory to start off with, and then I got turned over to stores. Now there was a staff sergeant and a sergeant for the stores, plus labour, German labourers, which we had to teach them how to lay the stores there, how to keep it clean and all this thing. And then demands would come into us from the barrack inventory accountants, stores to be issued, and that had to be set up, kept bin cards and that type of thing, which the German staff didn't know the first thing about, had to be taught.
Did you find your German staff caught on quickly when you were training them?
Yes. Their English was basically practically nothing. But over a time, they would get used to the English words of the accommodation stores we were holding. The bit of German I knew, and then we sort of we got together on it. And then going back to my private life, she then said, "All right, then we can get married." Now, to get married in Germany in those days was quite a time-consuming job.
Presumably you had to have permission to marry.
You had to get permission.
How did you go about that?
Well, you write an application out straight away to your OC, and this then gets passed on to the headquarters, and they said it would take 6 months to get the paperwork done. She has to have a security check on her, all the background. And this has been going on some time in Germany then, and I've known some people nearly a year afterwards hadn't got married because the paperwork hadn't come through. I think they purposely held it up. They didn't want these marriages to take place at that time. So I said to her, "I'm not going to wait all that time messing around. I said, we're going to get married in England." She said, "How you can do that?" I said, "Well, you can't travel with me, but I'll get you a ticket and you go from Hamburg to Harwich." That was the way then. "And get the train down to Liverpool Street Station. And I will go to England, the military route, a couple of days beforehand, and I'll meet you there." I said, "I'm going to stay with my friends in Cornwall, in Liscard." I said, "We're going to get married from there."
Were there any restrictions on German civilians travelling?
No, all she had to have was a letter from me inviting her to visit England to, I said, meet my parents. Now, my parents were alive. I never went back to them because of the disputes what we had when I was a child. Although I still wrote to them now and again to know where I was. So, anyway, poor Eva, she made this journey not knowing what was going to be. Her English was very little at that time.
What about your German? Presumably that had improved a bit.
So, anyway, she was thankful she saw me at Liverpool Street Station. I took her that day to meet my father, so I had done that part. But the same night, got on the train, went to Cornwall. He said, "Well, what?" And my friend put me up. He said, "Now," I said, "we're going along to the registry office tomorrow morning, quickest way, get married by special licence." So went along there. Of course, they say you to get a special license, but you're supposed to be a resident of that town or 15 days or something, whatever it is. And I'd only just arrived. But in my 6 months' leave, I spent it in Liscard. I said, I lived here for 6 months. I said, I've only been away in the army. I said. So I said, oh, well, that's good enough then. And we got the special licence. We got married. There was only one unfortunate thing about it. My RSC people, directly I put in for 6 weeks' leave, which I was entitled to in one go, they had to send somebody on a course. I don't know, what the heck was it? It was a clerical course for duties in the field. That's what it was supposed to have been. And they said, you can take part leave and then you go on to this course and then have the rest of your leave afterwards. Which wasn't very good. I'd leave poor Eva behind in this car and come up to Borden in the winter here and go on this course.
How long did the course last?
Nearly a month, this damn thing. And it was cold, wet, windy, next to no heating, and staff duties in the field. Now, I didn't know anything. I was doing queue work, not staff duties in the field.
Had you been rebadged to the service corps by that time?
No.
Still DCLI?
Still DCLI. So
attached to service
yes.
corps?
Mm. So they said you're classified as clerks, and we had to do a grade 3 clerks test just for the record, that's what it was. Well, all right, I got down to this blooming course there, and I didn't do too bad at it. The only thing but other people were beating me in, because they were clerks, was typing.
Yes.
They beat me on typing, but when it came to the bus name, I did it as well as anybody. So, incidentally, there was two other sergeants there. We powered up together on the course. That was in England somewhere. And eventually I went back, had leave, went back to Germany. And within 1 month, those two other sergeants had proposed to Lüneburg. Only bought the purse, it's a coincidence.
Did you have any trouble when the army discovered that you got married in England?
Well, they couldn't do much about it because it was legal. The only thing is they said you will not be entitled to quarters for 6 months. So we still had to do our 6 months. So we eventually got into quarters in Lüneburg. And then I got posted again then to Delmenhorst. And in the meantime, we had transferred to the RSC. So I had to put an RSC badge up after all this time. I got posted to Delmenhorst to take over a store completely on my own, only a German staff.
Was this a barrack store again?
A barrack store, yes.
Now, around about this time, this is... What year would this be going on? 1948, 748?
Well, 48, we've pushed on now because I got married in 1950.
Right. Now, during the time you've been in Germany in various jobs, political tension had been growing. There'd been... The Iron Curtain had come down across Germany. There'd been the Berlin Airlift. Were you aware of that going on while you were...
Oh, yes, I knew that was going on. In fact, when we got married, it was parents, they lived in East Berlin. Now, just before the Iron Curtain went up and the wall, we had paid a visit to Berlin. And I motored up there, and at Helmstedt, you pass through the our own military police, and you have to have a special form which is written in English and Russian. And movement control make this form out for you. And it has to be exact, as the Russians said it would have to be. Every abbreviation, comma, or dot must be in the right place. I don't make the form out. The unit doesn't make it out. Movement control, and you collect it from them. I got there, and the military police took one look at it and says, your form's not correct. You have to go back to your unit. I went into a rage then. I said, my unit's about 400 miles back there. I said, I didn't make the form out. Don't blame me. I don't blame the unit. Movement control. I said, surely you can do something about it. Anyway, after a conflab, I had to go back about 4 miles to their barracks and had another form made out on the spot.
By the military police themselves?
By the military police.
Did they get it right for you?
Well, they got it right, yes. Mm-hmm. And then you pass through their control and you stop by the Russians. It's only a wooden building, it's quite small. You leave your car there and you go inside and you have this little cubby hole and somebody will pull it up and you pass your passport and this document there. Down comes the flap again and they keep you waiting there. I mean, to check that would take about 2 minutes. About 30 minutes later they give it to you back.
And you carry on?
Then you carry on. And then you... You can only go by a certain speed through that corridor to Berlin. You mustn't go more than 60 kilometres an hour. You're timed when you leave and you're timed when you get there. And you daren't be before that time.
Or after that time, presumably.
Well, not long after that time. As long as you were reasonably within that time, anyway.
Yeah.
So you were checked by your own military police and warned about it. So... we went to Berlin and stayed with the wife's sister. And at that time, her parents could come over from East Germany and visit them and that type of thing. Later on, of course, the war went up and couldn't do it. Anyway, we made about 3 trips to Germany like that, to Berlin. And then... in later years, parents got out of East Germany because being retired, they are a liability to the state, as far as they're concerned. So they're allowed to come to West Germany.
Had the family originally come from Berlin in the first place?
No, they came from... originally, they came from East Germany... which has now been taken over by Poland. And on the wife's passport now is, where was you born? It's a place called Karzin, and it's still on that passport. It doesn't even say Germany. And you won't find Karzin on a map anymore. It's been renamed a Polish name.
Yeah.
And but it's still there. But anyway, it didn't stay in Lüneburg very long. No sooner I got everything running in nice order, they decided to close it. So I had to close that down. And my headquarters then was in Oldenburg, which had a bigger store there, more people. And the back officer came along and said to me, he said, well, we don't want to lose you. He said, are you willing to go work in the coal depot?
Coal depot?
A coal depot.
This presumably was this for heating houses?
And barracks.
And said, barracks,
well, I said, what does it entail? He said, well, in this big lager we got where the barrack stores is, there's a supply depot there. He said, we've got a storage of coal up to 20,000 tonnes, which is quite a... what's the name, he said? We're going to post the sergeant that's in charge of that. He said, and we put you in there, and later on... we don't know when, but the staff sergeant in the stores is going and want you to take that over at a later date. So I thought, well, if they think that much of me, I'll take over this coal depot. Well, you've got all these stacks of coal that have to be properly built up, measured. used to get it in by railway wagons. We had to unload it. We had cranes and all sorts of mechanical equipment to move the coal around there. We used to receive it in the winter. No, we received the coal in the summer to build up these supply to issue in the winter to Murray Quarters and Barracks.
How many staff did you have in that job?
Oh, I had about 20 Germans there. We had a workshop there to maintain the equipment and that type of thing there. Petrol and stuff that had to be drawn up. And every month, especially in the when it came to the winter time, when we started issuing, we units would send down their tippers, filled it up, put it over Weybridge, booked it out. At the end of the month, all these stacks had to be measured up from what your stocks were. And it was nothing to be 50 tons surplus. Couldn't help it, because you received it
in bulk, I suppose.
In bulk,
yes.
Dry,
yeah.
And in the winter it was going out wet.
So it would weigh more.
It weighed more. Mm. And it was accepted like that. The only thing is that 50 tons had to be on charge every month, or whatever it was. Anyway, I did it there for nearly a year, and then eventually I took over the barrack stores there. I got discharged from the army.
Why were you discharged? Was it because your time expired, or?
Yes. Little things happened there. Still got sent away on another course, on a drill course.
It's a bit late in your career to learn drills.
Well, the RSC had got a little bit lax in there and that type of thing. It's not only barrack services, you had all sorts of different types of RSC units in the British zone. And they thought it was a good idea that everybody does, they called it 1, 2 and 3 drill certificates. So I went on this thing there.
Was that in Germany?
In Germany. Went to it was a transport company that was running the drill, and they had some drill instructors there. The only thing I found different there was doing what I call normal infantry drill.
Instead
of light infantry, I didn't stand at ease after, but I didn't find nothing difficult at all, though. Even it came to rifle drill and that type of thing, and drilling a squad and all that type of
You'd moved to the RASC. Did you keep in touch with the Duke of Cornwall once you'd rebadged?
No, I hadn't at that time. Being out in Germany, I sort of lost contact with them altogether then.
But they were in Germany, weren't they, in the Rhein Army?
Oh, yes.
There was a battalion.
When the 1st Battalion did come back to Germany, in Osnabrück, I did get in touch, and the band sergeant there was a chap named Hamlod, and when I was the Lance Corporal, he was a boy. But we went down and we stayed there for a few days and went to their the last dance they had in Germany, something, when they was leaving again. So I did see them then, and saw my old bandmaster as well.
Had the battalion changed at all when you saw them?
I didn't have much to do with the battalion itself then. I only was with the band, and that was it.
So some continuity with the band?
Yes. I'd like to go back to I think when we was in Aldershot, which I should have mentioned before, we had a bandmaster, Dean, who did the Nello Hall inspection with us. Very clever man he was, a very good musician. And within days of that inspection, he was posted on promotion to the RSC staff band. And from Nello Hall, we got a newly made up bandmaster. A bit unfair of him. He's going overseas straight away and in a war zone.
Quite.
So it's good job. Well, I say that I was there. I knew what type of life what things was going to be, and also with the other 1st Battalion men I had with me. So we did help him a lot.
Did he have difficulty in adjusting to life in the field?
No, he adjusted. I mean,
well, where had he been before?
He was an artillery man from the artillery staff band, and of course, the last 3 or 4 years he'd been at Nellah Hall
training.
Yes.
Did you find adjustment to civilian life difficult when you left the army?
Yes.
What did you miss particularly?
Well, I suppose I lost the comradeship of the friends what you make in the army, and that even in the RESC, and that I made friends there with them. Going back to still in the RESC and did this dual course, and then this is a last bit of it. This